Welcome to Movie Maniacs, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, we're back with another edition of Movie Maniacs. That's right, it is another quarantine edition, although I'm allowed to go out. Chuck really still can't really go out and do the things he wants.
Well, my stay-at-home order has been lifted, Mike. I just can't go to a movie, go to a gym, go to a restaurant and sit down. Other than that, it's all good.
That sounds like a blast. Yeah. Basically, I'm not that much. I'm a little ahead of you.
I am curious. Is the movie theater open?
Still not open in our area, although we are allowed to do it half capacity. They just haven't opened our AMC.
I think the problem is I don't know. What are they going to show?
No product.
They certainly are not going to fill every screen. There's no way.
No, I was actually in the area of our movie theater last night, and there was a couple that went to go up to buy tickets. Apparently, they thought it was open because they looked at the restrictions of the state.
Right.
And they were turned away because nobody was there. So we'll see what happens. I keep looking at their app, and still no word on what things will open up. I'm thinking maybe they're waiting for the final phase, which will be the July 4th weekend, and that's when
we are
going to get some theatrical releases. You know, the lines will be around the block for the Russell Crowe thriller. That's coming.
I have no doubt about that one.
Yeah, so that'll be like when Jaws was released back in
probably.
You know, so
good, huh?
By the way, Movie Maniacs, if you're following us on the podcast, make sure you rate and review us and share us. And thanks for listening to Mobile 1190 107.5 FM if you're listening on the radio. I got a chance to see a movie that was supposed to come out theatrically, Chuck, and actually was a Netflix release. And that's The Lovebirds. That's the movie that about a young couple, ethnic couple, I guess. It's a guy from who's very funny, actually, Chuck. He was on Silicon Valley. He did that movie a couple of years ago. Was it Love Sick, about his real life?
Right. It's a good movie.
His real life.
Big hit, too.
Big hit back in the day. Kumail Nanjiani is his name, by the way. He wrote that book about that movie, and he stars with Issa Rae in this movie about an African-American and Indian couple that get tied up into a murder mystery, per se. The script itself is pretty thin, I will say that, but the leads, there's so much energy between the leads and great comic timing between the two of them. You can get through this hour and a half really, really well on Netflix. It's called Lovebirds, The Lovebirds. It was supposed to be a summer release. Instead, it's May 22nd. It was supposed to come out in theaters. Instead, it comes out on Netflix now, Chuck, because that's the world we live in. But it's very entertaining. Some good stuff in there, although the script is paper thin, to say the least. So I would recommend The Lovebirds on Netflix right now, as the options keep coming to us. Steve Carell, his new series on Netflix, has just been released, called Space Force, and a lot of movies and TV shows to choose from. But The Lovebirds was top 10 on Netflix the last week or so people are finding it. Now, fun stuff. Real quick, did you watch anything outside of The Walking Dead? No? Okay,
let's move on. I did not. I do have some stuff, though.
Well, let's start.
How about this week in movie history? Want to do a few?
Go ahead. You get us started there, and then we'll
this week in movie history. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom hit theaters. Here's what's significant about that. One, in my opinion, it's the best of all the Indiana Jones films. You may not agree, but I love that film. I think
it's the fastest moving,
most exciting. I love that film. Anyway, that film comes out in 1984. This week, under the banner of a PG rating, family audiences, especially parents, are a little bit horrified when the voodoo doctor villain rips the heart out of the guy's chest, creates a little bit of controversy. Then the same summer, Gremlins comes out. Mother puts a gremlin in a microwave. Parents, again, a little upset. So they constitute what's now a PG-13 rating. First film to be released PG-13 of that summer. Red Dawn with Patrick Swayze and Charlie Sheen.
Yep, PG-13 it is, and away we go. No doubt about it. That was 1984, the greatest movie year ever. Is that what year it was?
It was.
Oh, my gosh. What else you got from this year in movie history?
1942, Yankee Doodle Dandy with James Cagney premieres in New York City. A staple for me when I was growing up, WPIX Channel 11, every 4th of July. Cagney, known for mostly gangster films, I think this is his signature role. I love that movie.
Hard to argue, although I haven't seen it in many, many years. He's great, great stuff. About 1942, you're going way back. How about something when I was alive, Chuck? You got anything from when I was alive?
No. I got same year, 1942, Bing Crosby records White Christmas becoming the best-selling single of all time, over 100 million copies sold over time. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, I wonder how difficult it was to sing, lay down that track, Chuck, in the middle of the summer. Not even summer. You have to sing it in May, and then it comes out. But of course, it's iconic and lives on forever. And it would be in the movie Holiday Inn, right? A lot of people think it's in the movie White Christmas movie, but it's not. That song debuted in the movie Holiday Inn.
Yes, it did.
And then they would make a White Christmas movie after the fact.
Correct.
So. Anything else? Because I've got some great movie news I want to get to.
Go ahead, movie news.
All right, we were just mocking it a couple weeks ago, but the Universal plan to reboot the monster movies from the yesteryear is moving forward, and some interesting inspired casting, Chuck. It looks like Ryan Gosling is set to play the Wolfman in the Universal films of the movie Wolfman. We've tried this before. We're going to try it again, and to get Ryan Gosling's a pretty good get for them. I'm wondering, though, you know, he's not really known to draw the box office on name alone.
Invisible Man did pretty well.
It did.
Low budget, though.
It was, and I don't know if this will be any higher budget, to say the least.
Well, they got to pay him a little.
They do, but, you know, I don't know if he, you know, Ryan Gosling above the title.
No, I agree.
It really doesn't. It doesn't really inspire too much, but it, of all the monster movies, is Wolfman the one? I mean, which one of the backstories of all these monsters is the one that says it? You know, it really sustains its own movie, and I enjoy the character the most. Is it the Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein? Which one do you?
I say Dracula.
You think Dracula is?
If you cast right.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. Also, big movie news, Chuck, and I'm really excited about this. How about a Rocky documentary narrated by Stallone? It's going to premiere on demand, called 40 Years of Rocky, The Birth of a Classic, and it's written and produced by The Rock. Oh, this is pretty big. Wow. Some big names. The documentary official trailer was released. Chuck, I'll sit down and watch.
Me too.
I watched all 9 episodes of The Last Dance. To me, I'd watch 9 episodes of this as well.
If you have behind-the-scenes footage of those movies, absolutely.
Yeah, it looks like it will be, because they've got a lot of the footage from your pal, John Alvinston's home, from his home movies as well. So a Rocky documentary, I don't know how much are we, you know, it feels like I've been with this movie all 40 years. I don't know how much I'm going to learn from it.
No, I think you will. I'm sure you have some really cool, never seen behind the footage. That'd be good.
How about Henry Cavill? Looks like he's in talks to return to Superman. I didn't think this would happen again, but he's going to be back in an upcoming DC movie.
Here's the thing. Not a standalone sequel to The Man of Steel, but they want to use him in the overall DC universe. I know he's going to appear in the sequel to Shazam. And probably Aquaman 2. But I don't get it totally, do you?
No, when did Superman become like Lenny and Squiggy popping up out of nowhere and just to have this cameo scene and then he walks away?
They're going
to
have the same philosophy Marvel's using with the Hulk.
Or, yeah. Exactly.
I don't get it.
Well, it's more like Robert Downey Jr., right? Because Tony Stark's been in a lot of different movies just popping in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But
Superman is so powerful. It's harder to do that with.
Yeah, because he is Superman. I mean,
right? Because once he enters the realm, he could take over the storyline,
and he should take over.
Pop in and out. Yeah. Hey, I gotta go. See you later.
Very, very interesting.
I'm glad he's back, though.
Yeah, he's good. He's very good at Superman. Don't get me wrong.
Very good.
How about the sequel to Sonic, Chuck? They're going to do it. Sonic the Hedgehog actually did pretty well in theaters.
It did.
Got decent reviews.
Well received, too.
Yeah.
It was good. I actually saw that. I liked it.
What? You went to the theaters to see that?
Well, we booked it. So I sat down one night and I said, you know what? Let me watch this. And I enjoyed it. It was
so this actually probably one of the final movies you saw in a theater, I would think, right?
It was one. Well, way back was the last film I saw in a theater.
So does it work if you don't get Jim Carrey back?
Yeah, it does.
All right. That's all.
Why wouldn't he want to come back, though?
True. That's very true. That's a lot of what I have for movie news. What else you got?
Disney bought 20th Century Fox, which you know, and evidently they are moving very much forward with a new Planet of the Apes movie, which will expand on the universe created in the last trilogy. Caesar, I guess, will be back in some form. You like that idea? I think they should just reboot now the
Start
original.
Start all over again?
No, I would reboot the original 68 version with the Taylor character. I think that, to me, that's a story people want to see. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think they kind of wore the recent trilogy thin towards the end there, running out of ideas and storylines to do. You're probably right. But I guess they're figuring the new generation have seen these movies now and haven't even bothered with the Charlton Heston version, Chuck. So let's build from here instead of instead of out there. I don't know. I'm not doing cartwheels. I got to tell you that much.
Did you like the trilogy? I did. Listen, the first one was the most accessible in terms of a mainstream audience rise. The other two were technically brilliant, and they were so good movies. Maybe went over the head a little bit, especially the third one of some mainstream audiences.
Yeah, but I liked them.
Good movies. They're good.
I liked them. Nothing.
But the original films are iconic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we're actually going to talk about them in a little bit because we're doing apocalyptic movies, end of the world movies, through the years. I can't do cartwheels over that one, Chuck. I got to be
all
honest
right.
with you. Woody Harrelson was interesting as the villain in the last one. I will say that
he was.
Anything else?
HBO Max premiered.
How did it do?
I don't know. They plan on having 2,000 movies in their library before year is over. They currently have all 8 Harry Potter movies to stream on HBO Max, if you're a fan. Yeah.
And I did find out that you have to pay extra even if you have HBO. So
you do. How much?
I think it's $15. It's like everybody else has got to pay. I don't know, Chuck. Are they going to saturate this market?
Eventually, yeah. But I could tell you Netflix is not going anywhere, nor is Disney Plus.
No,
they're going to be the two front runners.
I would think Amazon Prime is not going anywhere.
No.
All right. Well, before we get to the end of the world movies, unless you have anything else, Chuck, I mean, you seem a little groggy this morning. I hope you're
okay. I'm a little
tired. I'm a little worried about you.
Okay. One other thing.
All right. Good. He's got something, people.
Apple TV is partnered with Paramount. They will produce and finance Martin Scorsese's newest film, Killer of the Flower Moon. De Niro and DiCaprio star.
Wow.
I guess it'll be theatrical and then go to Apple TV.
Yes.
Do you
yes.
have Apple TV?
Yes, I do, actually.
How many do you have?
I have pretty much everything but Hulu. I have Apple TV, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus. And yet I still channel surf and can't find anything to watch. I am enjoying, I will tell you, Defending Jacob, which is on Apple Plus, the mini series which stars Captain America.
What about regular TV? Do you watch any CBS,
no,
NBC?
Absolutely not. I don't.
Why?
I don't, because there's nothing good on there.
Okay.
I don't feel like watching NCIS, CSI, any of those things.
All right.
Chris O'Donnell doesn't excite me on CBS. NBC, all they do, I don't even know what they have on anymore. There's nothing that excites me. The only thing I watch is Fox. Because Family Guy's on it. That's pretty much about it, Chuck. Everything else I watch on streaming, which begs the question, why don't I just cut the cord and just you know, this last summer, I probably could have, considering there was no sports on there. I kept most of my cable because of sports, and I'm not even watching that anymore. So maybe I should cut the cord on this, Chuck. What do you think? Should I?
No.
Why? What's going to debut on NBC? Are they going to do a reboot of Family Ties that I'm
You got to start binge watching Chicago Fire.
Oh, my God. I would like watch it. Those. I mean, if I had to watch those movies, those shows, any of those Chicago shows, I'd be like
Malcolm That one McDowell. I like a lot. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, well, it'd be a lot like Clockwork Orange for me. You'd have to keep my eyes open like Malcolm McDowell. I didn't
know what. Toothpicks?
Toothpicks in my eyes, I'd rather.
All right.
I don't know how you watch that.
Let's keep this thing moving.
Are you there? Is it 10 o'clock Tuesday nights? When is this show even on?
Wednesday at 10.
Oh, Wednesday at 10. So you got the popcorn ready to go, and you're sitting there in your love seat. And remember last week? It was so good. I can't. Is that what you're like or no?
It's a nice company show. Nice cast.
Nobody watches TV like you anymore. Nobody watches TV like that anymore.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Maybe I'm wrong.
So you would binge watch everything if you could.
Everything I binge watch. That's it.
You don't think there's any? Let me ask you a question. You don't think there's any viability in waiting a week to think about it, let it stir in your mind? I like to watch The Walking Dead. I like it once a week. I like read. I like to read. I like to hear people's opinion. I like the anticipation. I do.
No, I don't. In fact, Defending Jacob, the Apple Plus series I was talking about with Chris Evans, which is good. Not great, but it's good. Uh-huh. They debuted four episodes to start. You could binge watch. And you have to wait every week. And then you get notification. Oh, it's up on Apple Plus if you want to watch the newest episode. And I hate it. I'm like, I just want to watch it when I want to watch it. This is a freedom of choice now in this world. On demand means that for a reason. When I want to watch it, I'll watch it. You don't dictate to me when I watch it. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think that those days are long gone, Chuck. But they're still out there. I guess people are – This Is Us, is that even the thing anymore?
It still does fairly well.
Yeah, is it a thing, though? It's not a thing. It was a thing, but it's not a thing
anymore. It was more of a thing 2 years ago.
And why did that burn out?
I just think there's so many choices for people to watch. It's hard to maintain a mass crowd and a mass buzz, no?
Well, I think it's what I'm saying here is that people just won't wait a week to watch a show.
Remember the expression when we were younger, water cooler buzz?
Water cooler buzz is gone. I mean,
It doesn't last, that's for sure.
No, and I think The Office is stronger now than it was when it was on.
It's
was
interesting. I have a lot of young employees, sick ice cream and smoothie shops, 16, 17, 18. They watch The Office.
Yeah.
They
watch it the way you can watch it now. And
they talk about it, and they like it, and they debate it. They like it. I like that. That's cool stuff.
It is. And you wonder, like we talked about, if there are other series back in the day that they would just do it with. Fire, and a lot of people would see it and watch it again. Chuck, let's do Fast Five real quick before we get to the end of the world movies. Are you more awake now? Because we got to be quick. This is Fast Five, but you need a quick reaction. I want to make sure you're with us. All right, let's start with a lady, great lady actually, Benning. Annette Bening is 62 years old, of course. Mrs. Warren Beatty.
How about Grifters?
Yeah, Grifters is a great movie. How about The American President? You mentioned that a couple.
Oh, I love that. Her chemistry with Michael Douglas is really damn good in that film.
How about American Beauty too? What a great film!
Of course, off Grifters, she actually got the role, if people who don't know this, as a Selina Kyle Catwoman in Batman Returns, but got pregnant and had to leave that project. Michelle Pfeiffer came in and became a big. Big, even bigger than she was playing Catwoman in Burton's.
And Batman. I liked her. I really liked her too in A Touch of Class in the Captain Marvel.
She would have been good, though, Annette Bening as Catwoman.
Oh, yeah. She would have been perfect.
Yeah, she would have been good.
Real well. And she's really good in the superhero movie Captain Marvel. She's really good in that. She pops up there.
Yep.
Powers Booth, who died 3 years ago, would have been 72 years old this weekend. A great, powerful.
Well, we know. It would be Red Dawn, Sudden Death. How does that sound?
Pretty simple stuff. Although he's great in Tombstone as well. He's a good villain in Tombstone. Very powerful actor. Loved him. How about his pairing with Brandon Lee back in the day? That was a good movie. What was that movie, Chuck? They did.
I know what you're talking about, but he was always good.
Rapid fire.
Yeah, he was always good.
Yep. How about Morgan Freeman? If you had to guess how old Morgan Freeman is, what are you going to say?
He's in his 80s, right?
83 years old. And I remember Morgan Freeman on The Electric Company, believe it or not, back in the 70s. That's how long he's been in my life.
It's Shawshank Redemption. But he's great in everything.
He really is. It's hard to narrow to one, seven.
What, Voice of God in Evan Almighty, right? Or is it Bruce Almighty?
Both of them, actually.
He's in
both of them.
He is God. As good as God as anybody, no?
Yeah. How about Lucius Fox, too, in all three Batman movies? He's really good in that. He doesn't have a lot of screen time.
Elevating the material. He's as good as it gets.
Great stuff. All right. You would think it'd be easy. Tom Holland and Spider-Man are one and the same now, but he's going to be 24 years old. Wow, he's still so young.
I don't know him anything other than Spider-Man.
That's not true, because he's fantastic in the movie called The Impossible, where he plays one of the young sons.
Yeah.
He's actually better than all the other actors in that film. I thought he should have got an Academy Award nomination for that. But what Spider-Man appearance is your favorite for him?
Probably the last Avengers movie.
Yeah,
I think he works really well in the Avengers film.
He does.
I like the two Spider-Man scenes. They're very enjoyable. I don't think they're as good as the first two Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans, but they're solid. And he's
didn't you really enjoy him in the Captain America Civil War one where he pops up
that.
There?
He's really good in that too.
He's about the only thing good in that one. I did not enjoy that.
No,
that movie that much. Well, I don't want to see my superheroes fight each other. They're on the same team.
Understood.
We have enough problems in this world.
Sometimes there is conflict, though.
There is, but you don't have to take it to the extreme that those two did.
Once in a while, maybe. Why not?
All right, Chuck. Last but not least, Jamie Lee Curtis's dad, Tony Curtis, who passed away 10 years ago. He would have been 95 years old. Tony Curtis.
I have to go with Some Like It Hot, but Spartacus too.
I guess the two pop in my mind. What about the third coach in the Bad News Bears series? No?
That was some interesting casting. No,
in Japan, I believe they went this time around.
They did.
That one failed at the box office and killed the trilogy.
I remember renting it numerous times though on DVD.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
not Blu-ray, VHS.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's on. DVD, to be honest with you, Blu-ray. That came out in 1978.
Talk about three very different sequels in that trilogy.
Oh, my gosh. The first two worked for me.
Well, the first one's iconic.
Yes.
Second one is very interesting. William Devane, I like it. Let them play in the Eastern Astrodome. Cool stuff. Third one, not so much.
Oofa. By the way, Bob Watson just passed away last week.
I know, I heard that.
He utters the immortal words, "Hey, let the kids play."
Yeah.
He's the guy that started it, Chuck, Bob Watson, from the Astros.
Worth the price of admission, that scene, no?
It is, and I remember I was around that age when I went to the Houston Astrodome. I was about 9 to 10.
Well, how was that?
It was unbelievable. The only thing
I remember about that stadium is, boy, I hated when the Mets played there because they never won.
Yeah. Do you remember the TV movie that takes place in the Astrodome, Murder at the World?
No.
Murder at the World Series? No?
I know of it. I just don't remember watching it. I don't remember it in my mind's eye, but I do know of it. Yep.
Bruce Boxleitner is a crazy person. Yeah, trying to kill
Hill Street Blues fame.
So, back in the day, no doubt about it. But we're way off tracks if I'm talking about TV movies of the 70s taking place in the Houston Astrodome. But, Chuck, let's talk about these end-of-the-world movies that came out. You know, obviously, Planet of the Apes is one that's etched in our minds to really get things started in 1969. But there are some before that I've seen that leave a lasting memory. Like, I did see Failsafe, the all-star cast with Henry Fonda as the president. And then the movie that spoofed it, Dr. Strangelove, obviously.
Right.
Peter Sellers in multiple roles. Movies that stand the test of time. And I remember Panic in Year Zero, Ray Milland, a 1962 movie about a family that have to live through a nuclear war.
I don't remember that one.
The Time Machine, obviously, with Rod Taylor, which was a great, great film. And then back in the day, you had, obviously, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original from 19, 56, movies like When Worlds Collide, At Earth's Core. You know, they made these movies a lot. Forbidden Planet, technically, is a movie on that level as well.
What about the one with Fred Astaire?
Fred Astaire on the beach.
I like Gregory that one. Peck, that Ava one's Garner. Really good. I like that
that's
one
a
lot.
Real good one.
They did that as a TV movie with Brian Brown, if you remember.
They did. That's right. Right. They did. So, I mean, these movies, you know, there were phases. The early 80s, you had a lot of them because of the Cold War and Russia. And you had them, obviously, back in the 60s because right. of when it all started with the mm-hmm. brink of a nuclear war with the Cuban Missile Crisis. So you see a lot of these type of movies. And then you even had the first Omega Man movie that came out way back in the day, right? Wasn't that Vincent Price was the one who did it first, right,
Chuck? Last Man on Earth.
The Last Man on Earth, which was back in 1964, based on the Richard Matheson I Am Legend.
It's a very low-budget Italian film, but he's a really interesting lead in it, and it is probably the most accurate to the source material. I like that film.
I've never seen that movie, but... I wonder, is it you can't find that anywhere, can you?
No, you can. There's a widescreen version on DVD and Blu-ray, actually. I believe it's Blu-ray, but it's definitely DVD. I have it. It's a good-looking print. The best print they've ever had of it. Widescreen, 2.2. Yep.
All right.
It looks good.
We'll look for that one. And then, of course, The Planet of the Apes, Chuck, iconic movie. 1968, actually.
Yes. That beach scene is as good a scene as I've ever seen in a movie.
Actually, yeah, because you don't know it's an apocalyptic movie.
And it's just thought-provoking. It's so well shot. They did not use, unlike what Tim Burton did, using sound stages, which was ridiculous. They actually did real outdoor shooting, and that is an iconic scene on many levels.
Chuck, you talk about great endings to movies and I can only imagine what it must have been like in theaters when you saw the Statue of Liberty and the effect that it had.
It had to be amazing.
I'm trying to think, what movie, is there a movie in your day that you saw the ending that just blew you, an ending that blew you away and you couldn't?
Yeah, when Mark Wahlberg saw the Lincoln Memorial. And no?
No.
Okay. I actually thought it made no sense, but it was interesting.
I remember the end of Seven. Was yeah. kind of like that for me.
Oh hell, heck yeah!
I remember the end, even the end of the Glass series. Split. When I saw Split, the end of that was like, wow, the adrenaline rush I got at the end of that movie.
I agree with that. That's pretty cool.
The end of, I can only imagine what it must have been like. And then you go into the '70s, Chuck, and that decade, you've got all the other ones come out: Battle, Beneath, Conquest.
Let's talk about Beneath for a second. Probably one of the most unique, unusual, weird sequels of all time, but I love that film over time. The first half is a retread, a low-budget B-movie retread with James Franciscus as the lead. They originally wanted Burt Reynolds. He didn't do it. That would have been really interesting over time. But the second half of that film, when Heston pops up,
mm-hmm.
underground, mutant apes, telepathic, it's fascinating, I think.
Yeah, you wonder why they didn't.
And it's bleak, and it's bleak as hell in terms of an ending of any G movie ever released, ever.
Yeah. You wonder why they didn't just expand that into a 2-hour movie and just get rid of that prologue there, Chuck. It's that there was a lot of interesting stuff that might have made a full movie instead of just half a movie.
When he's underground walking the train tracks of New York City, and you see Radio City Music. Well, yeah, it's all matte paintings, but it's really cool sci-fi.
Chuck, also in the 70s, you get all the other ones, and none of them really stand out to me as just one that's a time travel one, and I can't remember which one that is, to be honest with you. But we do have a whole podcast, if you want to go back in our archives, examining all the Planet of the Apes movies. And then a TV series came out as well. They kind of really – talk about getting diluted and really – dragging things along. They probably made three too many Planet of the Apes movies.
Well, that TV show, you know, it's interesting. There's one of those channels, they play the old stuff. It's Channel 3 on Blue Ridge Cable here in Pennsylvania. And I taped an episode of Planet of the Apes the other day, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good. And I got to tell you know what it is? It's the equivalent of playing with a Planet of the Apes doll, where you're making up your own story because there's nothing to tell.
Right.
It's just like, okay, we'll show up to set. We'll have some apes and makeup. You have Roddy McDowell back. You have the two act. James Norton was one of them. I think his name was.
And, yes, it was James Norton, yeah.
It's just the same retread every single episode. But I understand why they did it. It was so popular.
Let's talk about also in the 70s, the two films that Charlton Heston would do, obviously right after. You could put a little post-apocalyptic trilogy together with Planet of the Apes, but then he would do Omega Man.
I love it.
Soylent Green right after that too, which I absolutely love Soylent Green. I remember to this day having nightmares as a young child watching it. Soylent Green, obviously last Edward G. Robinson movie as well. Very powerful scene at the end of that actually, you know.
Unbelievably powerful.
Yeah.
And beautifully, the music they use is great scene.
Yeah, and a dark
movie. Who played the guy who Heston said, I can't hear, turn the volume up?
I don't know.
Dick Van Patten.
Oh, yes, Dick Van Patten. That's right. Disturbing movie, to say the least, Chuck, but I love it. And I know you're a huge fan, obviously, of the Omega Man. We've talked about it a number of times.
One of the most unique scores of all time, the Omega Man. Ron Granger, I love that score.
I know it's got a lot of following, but I don't think I've ever seen it. The Bruce Dern apocalyptic movie, Silent Running.
I don't remember it.
A lot of the 2001.
Is Damnation Alley on all this?
Damnation Alley.
Let me tell you about Damnation Alley.
1977.
Okay.
Co-starred John Michael Vista.
The poster looks good. But boy, oh boy, that is a movie they released without the effects being finished. They're awful. That movie's bad. That's a major league bomb.
Yeah, and it almost plays like more of a Cannonball Run movie in after a World
War. But I like George Peppard. He was a really interesting guy.
Yeah, very good lead that never, I don't know, just, I mean, obviously.
A-team,
but never really, I guess back in the day he was, before our time, he was more of a bigger star with, you know, Breakfast at Tiffany's. Things of that nature. Chuck, did you ever see the Sean Connery movie, Zardoz? I know a lot of people like that movie. It's a John Borman film.
No.
Never saw that one. Have you?
No.
Also, in the 70s, if you're 25 years old, Chuck, and anything older than that, you're going to die because that's the rules in Logan's Run, which came out in 1976.
I always thought the premise was a lot better than the film.
Yeah, but I enjoyed this film. It takes place in 2274. I thought Michael York was a good lead. You've got a great pop-up cameo by both Farrah Fawcett and Peter Ustinov. Kind of movie just kind of ends. Do you remember the short-lived TV series after it? And who starred in the lead role as Logan?
Damn. Oh, I don't remember.
Gregory Harrison, Trapper John M.D. fame.
Well, I know they plan on remaking it for the big screen.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do.
And thoughts of that?
I think it's a good concept. I would do it.
How about the Don Johnson movie, A Boy and His Dog from 1975? More of a black comedy than anything else. You see that one?
I did.
You did see that?
I did. I think when I was a teenager, I watched it because it has a pretty cool nude scene in there.
Well, then you got to watch
now it. Now with Don Johnson, though. But
we get our first look at Michael Crichton, Chuck, his 1969 movie, The Andromeda book, The Andromeda Strain, came out. Actually, pretty effective nowadays. Obviously, it's a virus-type movie directed by Robert Wise, of all people.
And that movie made some money, I think.
It did. Not a star to be seen. No real stars in the film, but an effective movie of the 1970s as we look at the end of the world movies. But we couldn't leave the decade without maybe the best movie of them all. And that is Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978.
One of my all-time favorite movies. As bleak as it gets, but so powerful. And I love the cast in that film. It's just a great movie, Mike. It's a perfect film. It's a perfect film. And that scene in San Francisco, I love the setting in San Francisco. They up the scope from the original Invasion. Although they do have Kevin McCarthy comes and makes a cameo. So it feels like it's an extension of what's going on, which I love. Two movies set in the same universe, like Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, and then you look at it too, Chuck, and we're talking about great endings to movies. When Donald Sutherland opens his mouth and points his finger.
Awesome.
And how many movies.
Now, talk about an ending that had to freak people out in its time.
Oh, my gosh.
People had to be like, oh, imagine sitting when the credits roll after that first time.
Chuck, I remember seeing it in the theaters and being highly disappointed that that's how it ended.
Really?
But now, you know, when you're younger, you want the good guys to win and everything.
Of course.
Yeah, but now you watch it, and it just makes total sense. And the good trivia question is, who's the last remaining character that doesn't get the strain and die? And that would be Veronica Cartwright.
Yeah.
Who is also one of the second to last female survivor on Alien.
And she's also in the Invasion of Body Snatcher remake Invasion with Nicole Kidman.
Now, before
the Passion. I like that movie. I also like that movie a lot. We talked about this. It's an underrated film.
Before the decade would end, we would get an introduction to Mad Max, Mel Gibson series, which would all start. Now, Beyond Thunderdome and The Road Warrior would be bigger hits, obviously. But
yes.
Mad Max, I remember it being dubbed, too, watching it on video for the first time.
Always interesting movie history there.
Yeah, a little distracting, but George Miller would show what he would get to in the decade to come. And let's go right into, you know, The Road Warrior and Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Obviously, more polished films, more mainstream films, especially when you have Tina Turner as one of the video.
Well, that's the most mainstream Thunderdome, because Tina Turner and the music. It has that one great sequence in Thunderdome.
It does.
I like that stuff.
And Mad Max, the Road Warrior.
Was really a big hit. And universally, people love that movie.
And remember, Mel Gibson had not done the Lethal Weapon movies yet. So this is what people knew Mel Gibson as.
Yeah,
was Mad Max, and Road Warrior was a big hit. Did real good, and I love that film. How about let's talk about your girlfriend, Catherine Mary Stewart, because she has not one but two movies. Because let's get technical, she brings up a lot. I know you see her out about, but that rock opera, The Apple, was a post-apocalyptic movie, Chuck, that people still make fun of. But she also made, obviously, Night of the Comet.
Let's talk about Night of the Comet. I'd be honest, I've never seen The Apple in its full form. I know of it because I know I brought her to the theater. I'm involved with four straight years. Can't do it this year because of that. I don't know if you heard about this COVID thing going on.
But
she'll be back though. I love Night of the Comet. I remember sitting in the theater for the first time watching that. It was with a double bill at the Kingsway in Brooklyn. And I saw her come on the screen. And I was like, wow, she could be a movie star.
Yeah.
He just had a great look, tremendously appealing, intelligent on screen. I know it was a B movie, but it was a very well done B movie. The exterior shots of Los Angeles at dawn with nobody in the streets. Pretty inventive. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and I love that movie
too. The girls just want to have fun sequence in the shopping mall. That villain, creepy guy in the shopping mall.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And you know it's low budget because they couldn't get the Cyndi Lauper version of Girls Just Want to Have Fun,
right.
So they had to redo that. And
didn't matter, though.
No, it didn't. I will say this, Chuck. I wish it was a little less of a zombie movie. That's all.
Well, they try to throw in a couple different genres into one film. I don't think they really know what they wanted to make there, but it turned out good.
It did. Chuck, also in the 80s, and there are a lot, so we'll get to some of them, obviously. You've got the end of the world. Let's go to TV because there's three here that pop up before we go to the other movies.
We'll
talk about the iconic and mastermind of the Day After. We've talked about that a lot. The miniseries that the TV movie that debuted on November 20th, 1983.
What was the rating? Hundred million
people, nearly 39 million households.
Amazing.
Got a 62 share, Chuck.
Holy
62
cow!
62 share the day after with Jason Robards and an all-star cast on Nuclear War. Talk about great marketing leading up to a very powerful film.
Easily one of the most iconic and best TV movies of all time. Great lead, Jason. You couldn't cast better than that.
No, absolutely not. John Lithgow.
And let me tell you, when that nuclear bomb explodes in this, you know, you see in the sky, he's on the road, all car engines die when that thing's falling. And it was amazing, that movie. And it was sad and powerful, and it pulled no punches. No heroics at the end of that one, just bleakness.
Chuck, there's a couple of TV miniseries I want to bring up that were end of the world miniseries. And, you know, I remember it out. I don't remember anything about it. And that's from 1980, The Martian Chronicles. Do you remember this one with Rock Hudson Darren McGavin, Roddy McDowell.
It was weird. It was weird.
Tell me about it, because I can't. I remember it, but
I just remember bits and pieces in my head. I don't remember the full fleshed out story. I don't know if it was that good. I don't think it was that good. It was interesting. I watched it because I love that type of genre, but I don't think it's lived a legacy though.
Obviously, it's a Ray Bradbury book, and Robert Matheson actually does the teleplay for it as well, and it has quite an unbelievable cast in it. As I mentioned, some of the names, I just can't remember anything about it. But I do remember the miniseries with an iconic. I mean, when you pair David Soul with Kathy Lee Crosby, I mean, you're going to get fireworks, Chuck. There's no doubt about it. But do you remember the miniseries on NBC, World War III? Debuted January 31st, 1982, and we ran over a few nights. It also starred Brian Keith. Rock Hudson popped up in this. I believe he's
World
the
War III.
Yeah, World War III.
Let me ask you, was it a true end of the world movie? Or was a movie about marriage? What was it?
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I think a lot of it had to do with. But you know, Rock Hudson does get to play U.S. President Thomas McKenna.
Okay.
In this miniseries, but I mean, here's the times we lived in. The TV trailer would have David Soul and Kathy Lee Crosby, and people wanted to watch.
They sure did.
No memories of that. Is that what you're telling me?
You're talking about three networks, Mike. What were the choices? Yeah, if you marketed something, they're going to tune in.
Chuck, we go back into the movie theaters and the debut of Melanie Griffith, the movie I never saw, Cherry 2000. It's a post-apocalyptic chase.
I know it has a following.
Yeah, it does. How about, here's an easy one. Escape from New York, 1981. John Carpenter's bleak vision of what New York City would be like. Well, I think we passed the year it took place in, Chuck. And, you know, we're not quite there. But iconic movie, 1997, by the way, it takes place in. That's even old now.
Yeah, it is.
Snake Plissken. What do you say about Snake Plissken? But just, you know, I watched it the other day because it's on Amazon Prime. And the effects in this film, especially early on, are so good.
Well, that's why it has a legacy. That's what makes it fun. It's all practical.
Yeah, it's practical.
And you knew whatever budget he had, they're working diligently to come up with some really cool set pieces, and they did. And that's easily the most anti-hero of anti-heroes, no?
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorite characters of all time on TV. Chuck, do you remember the Canadian movie about three astronauts who come back down to Earth after World War III called DEFCON 4? Came out in 1985. They come down, and there's zombies down here as well after nuclear war, because that's what's going to happen after nuclear war.
Right. It's always about zombies. I don't remember it very well, no.
How about the you take an airplane in the sky in 1989, and you get hijacked by aliens. Mainly Cheryl Ladd is your alien. Chris Christopherson co-stars in Millennium. Came out in 1989.
I remember that, but played in theaters.
It did play in theaters.
I do remember that. I'll tell you a secret. Cheryl Ladd was my favorite Angel.
Hard to argue, but Jacqueline Smith was my first crush in all of my
really?
Life. So no doubt about it. I remember to this day sneaking out of my bedroom because my mom and dad were watching it in their bedroom, and I sat in the hallway and watched Charlie's Angels because I loved Jacqueline Smith. That head turn in the opening credits. I mean, come on.
That's a good crush. I like that.
It's a good crush. It's one of the.
It is.
How about The Seventh Sign, Chuck? And then we get a little more into the political end of the world here with Demi Moore and Michael Bain actually co-stars in this film. Yeah. I actually remember seeing this in 1988 and really enjoying it. Again, a bleak ending. But I thought Demi Moore, she's pregnant in this film or seems pregnant. I found it very effective. I know a lot of critics didn't like it, didn't make any money. But I'm a sucker for sometimes these biblical movies.
I don't remember it very well. I know when it came out, but I just don't remember watching the entire movie.
And last but certainly, you know, Blade Runner's in this film as well. But although, you know, that's more of a sci-fi film. That doesn't feel like the end of the world to me.
Okay.
But a true movie that did feel like the end of the world that blew me through, you know, blew me away when I saw it, small film, and that's Miracle Mile, which stars Anthony Edwards and Mara Wimmingham, and this is a true end-of-the-world movie with a surprising ending that, you know, you don't know it's going to be the end of the world.
Let me ask you a question. Do you remember the movie's tagline?
Something about if you knew something.
Be prepared to get blown to the back of the theater.
Yeah. And the guy picks up a phone randomly in L.A. Mm-hmm. There's somebody from one of the missile sites.
A nuclear missile site.
Nuclear war. We just launched missiles, and he's got to find a girl he just fell in love with and save her and him and get to higher ground or wherever.
I remember this movie played at a few film festivals and got really good buzz, right? So the posters and that's the time when newspapers ran ads for movies, and it was a really cool ad. I remember going opening day. I sat there, maybe three people in the theater, Kingsway, 4 o'clock showing. I brought my friend Robert. I remember that. He wasn't that big of a fan. I loved that movie. I knew, it's a great print on Blu-ray. When you watch it, there are times in a film where the rubber band of plausibility gets stretched.
Mm-hmm.
But it holds itself together enough. He's good. She's good. Well, he's really good.
He's fantastic.
That character could be a little annoying. But the locale where they shot it, that diner, and I love that stuff. It's so good.
Great stuff.
And it's bleak. You don't know what's going to happen at the end. You don't know if the story's true or not.
Yeah.
That's what makes it an interesting watch.
And you don't know if one man's overreaction has caused this LA to go on.
And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. Chuck, in the 90s, you had the Bruce Willis double bill of 12 Monkeys and Armageddon. We've talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Both very watchable films. 12 Monkeys, I think, is a great film.
Yeah.
But between Armageddon and Deep Impact, the end of the world, the asteroid's going to hit the planet. Deep Impact is a highly effective emotional drama.
I watch it all the time in my smoothie shop.
Yeah, and it plays as a science fiction film, but it's not.
It's on Netflix, by the way.
It's great. It's fantastic. I just watched it again.
Well, it's directed by Mimi Ledger, who was responsible for being one of the producers and writers of ER, right? She's got a lot of talent. She did that first movie with Nicole Kidman and George Clooney, The Peacemaker.
Yep.
They give her a deep impact. I think she did a great job. Now, initially, when that movie was released, I think people wanted more action. But over time, you realize that the character-driven nature of that film gives it its real power, and it holds up really well today.
It's great. It's great stuff. Chuck, you also had End of Days came out that decade as well. Literally, we're talking about
We're talking about stretching the rubber band of plausibility with End of Days on. I still like that movie, though. I know it's okay. It's a little hokey, but I still like it.
Yeah. I can't do cartwheels over it. I really can't. I know you're a fan of The Postman, which stars Kevin Costner.
I'm a fan only because it's an interesting misfire. It's a misfire.
It is.
It's a misfire. Make no mistake. Some of it's ridiculous, but some of it's very interesting. And I love Kevin Costner. Guy's a great lead.
He's a great lead. Not a misfire. You know, the Terminator movies, Chuck. Now, Terminator, the original, came out in the 80s, but I feel like Terminator 2 Judgment Day is more of an end of the world thriller, because that's what
it is.
It goes over the top with the possibility of what's going to end up happening.
Because the stakes are high.
The stakes are much higher.
And there's a lot of money involved in that film, and the effects are groundbreaking. He took that effect that he used in The Abyss, the liquid metal stuff, and really perfected it in Terminator 2. Rated R, huge opening weekend. People came out in droves to watch that movie in theaters.
Yeah. You ever wonder why he cut the Michael Biehn cameo and that, not left it in the original
cut? I don't know.
Waterworld, Chuck, 1995 with Kevin Costner again.
Did we see that together?
We might have. Yeah, Dennis Hopper, bad guy. Janine Triplehorn. Remember her? Wow.
I do. And the little girl was appealing in that movie.
Yeah.
She still works, that girl.
Just over the top, though, there's not much story to this film, Chuck.
I do like it, though. Here's the problem with that movie. The critics blasted it for its budget unfairly. Mm-hmm. Who cares what the budget is? He's unlikable for a lot of that movie, Kevin Costner. He is unlikable, and that's a problem. But he lightens up as the movie goes on. It's really well shot. Kevin Reynolds directed it, right? Who did the Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Costner tried to take control in the editing room, so on and so forth. It has issues, but I like it.
We did get another Body Snatchers movie in that decade as well, with Gabriel Anwar, Billy Worth in Body Snatchers from 1993. Forest Whitaker is effective in this film as well. It's a decent reboot Chuck, but it kind of just one of the movies they ran out of film and they just ended it.
I actually took a ride into New York. Did you go with me?
I don't remember.
I took a ride into New York City to see that film because it wasn't released anywhere else. Who was the director? King of New York director.
Yeah. What's his name? Apple Ferrara, right?
Right. Yeah. So it has an art house sensibility to it.
The two best of the decade for me, Chuck, are the TV series, The Stand, obviously, which is
going to be I love it.
Absolutely great. And the movie with Mimi Rogers, a biblical one, The Rapture, which I thought was one of those movies. You start one point opening frame and how you get to the last frame.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Roger Ebert raved about that movie, remember?
Oh, what a great movie that was. It's definitely a 4-star movie. If you haven't seen The Rapture, pick it up. Mimi Rogers has never been better. But The Stand lives to tell a longer story, Chuck, and a bigger story as well. Stephen King's epic novel on the small screen with the all-star cast. I remember seeing everybody from Jamie Sheridan to Rob Lowe. Everybody's great. And you got Gary Sinise and Ruby Dee. Everybody's great in this film. We'll wrap up the decade with the granddaddy of them all, alien invasion movie, Independence Day. You and I saw that at the Ziegfeld and to a raucous crowd. We'll ignore the second one. I'm not even going to bring it up when we get to the next decade or next two decades. But Independence Day stands the test of time. And a lot of it just has to do with when it came out, 4th of July weekend, and the star power of Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, and Bill Pullman. Great stuff.
I'll never understand how there's naysayers to this film. Beside Jurassic Park, to me, the most memorable, enjoyable summer popcorn movie I've ever seen in a theater.
Yeah, a lot of high notes. I honestly, and maybe it's because of the second film, but I honestly don't think it lives up to that first time we saw it. I don't.
I do.
Outside of the Randy Quaid moment, The other moments just don't live up as much. That Randy Quaid moment, to me, is the highlight.
You sure that second film's not affecting your viewpoint?
I'll be completely honest with you, it might. Chuck, we move into the new decade.
Okay.
Keep the disasters rolling along here. Obviously, you had the Resident Evil movies come out. That's a post-apocalyptic movie. I really don't want to get into it. I'm trying to stay away from as many zombie movies as we possibly can here. But we did get the Noah Emmerich back-to-back movies, The Day After Tomorrow and 2012 in the 2000s.
He likes that stuff, huh, Roland Emmerich?
He does. And
Day After Tomorrow, I still say first half of that film's really damn good. Second half is very pedestrian. I still like it because I like the cast. I like Dennis Quaid as a lead. I like Gyllenhaal. I like Emmy Rossin. I love the concept. It's a good one. I wish the second half was better.
Yeah, and to me, 2012 is in completely over the top schlock. I know I
you
like
don't
the
love
cast.
It?
I don't. I like the cast.
I do like it though. Listen, John Cusack is the lead in a disaster film. I thought he was having fun. They do a homage to the Poseidon Adventure where he has to go do an underwater swim.
Yeah.
Here's the homage.
You know, a lot of times when we see these movies, you wish they would go bigger and they'd be grander in scope. This movie
not always.
Way, way too grand in scope. I mean, billions of people actually die on screen in this movie.
And
there's actually a scene where we're supposed to care about a little dog. Survive. I mean, let's put things in perspective. This little dog, in the grand scheme of things, when billions of people are dying,
when the world is crumbling, when the disaster first hits, and he's driving in that limo, it stretches plausibility. Yeah, it does.
And as it
goes on, the Russian character,
yeah, it's bad. He's got way too much screen time
It's one of the problems over the history of disaster films, good or bad. The big mistake they always make is drawing in these ridiculously silly characters.
And one of them being in this film, too. The Oliver Platt character, too. I mean, you put the bad guy in disaster movies in the dictionary.
He should have had a twirling mustache, no?
Holy mackerel, I cannot believe he's even in this film. I really am a big fan of Children of Men, though, the Alfonso Cuarón.
It's good.
Movie. It's a great movie, Clive Owen. And great Michael Caine, if you want to see the best performance Michael Caine that nobody's ever seen, Children of Men, Chuck. That's a great movie.
I agree.
Not a great movie, and what the hell's going on? And you bring this up a lot. When Mark Wahlberg's in a bad movie, you wonder if he can ever make it.
You're talking about The Happening.
Oh, my God. What happened in The Happening?
I got to tell you, they lost me when they started running away from Wind.
But Wind is the
that,
bad
now,
guy.
Now, the first 15 minutes of that movie is very intriguing. And boy, oh boy, does it go like a stock going from 100 to zero? It goes that quick.
And really, weird casting, too, with Zooey Deschanel as the she didn't get a lot of big female parts outside of maybe Elf, but
yeah,
her to be opposite in this big apocalyptic M. Night Shyamalan movie. But yeah, this is the
– when he's miscast, oh, boy, he is miscast. Like Planet of the Apes remake, he's just miscast in these two, in those two films.
And let's face it, Chuck, this was the moment in time when M. Night Shyamalan had fallen off the – face of the earth with some really bad movies. One of my favorite end of the world movies, Chuck, came out in 2000s, and it really marks the end of Nicolas Cage's career in a lot of people's eyes. But if you have not seen Knowing, you are missing a great a great science fiction thriller with an unbelievable ending. And he's really good at it. He's more of an actual person.
Yeah. Are you trying to say Nicolas Cage is not doing quality material anymore? What are you saying?
This came out in 2009 as the decade was ending. Chuck, Knowing, when you think you know, you don't know. And then the ending is really powerful. And the kids are really good in it, too. And Rose Byrne, actually, is the female lead in this film.
A great.
Great movie. I highly recommend it to people if they haven't seen it yet. No doubt about it. Chuck, I Am Legend gave us Will Smith and that German Shepherd who should have gotten an Academy Award nomination for me.
Here's the thing.
When they killed the dog, they killed the movie.
First half of that film, great.
Yeah.
Second half, not so much. And I still like it, though, overall.
And again, a lot of it has to do with these movies dissolve into a zombie-type movie, and I think that's where it falls off the rails. And again, I cannot stress enough that the German Shepherd, when it leaves the film, the film just kind of goes away from
me. Yeah, well, it was a very sad moment. But let me ask you a question. Okay, you're in the editing room. You're the director. You're the editor. You're watching the dailies of this stuff. You know you have a good first half here. Really good. Setup, execution, story, emotion. You know you're not producing good CGI. You know you're not. I mean, because it's obvious. Why would you keep it in?
I don't know. Because that's what the studio is expecting. I don't know. Chuck, a movie that plays a lot like I Am Legend. I read the book, the 2009 movie called The Road, which starred Viggo Mortensen and a young star.
Played primarily in art houses, though. Just
it did. Very slow-moving and an unrecognizable cameo by Robert Duvall in this film. The book and the film are very similar, where you go through this long journey and you really get nowhere.
It's a slow moving. It has elements that I like. It's just so art house.
It is. We also had two Terminator movies in the 2000s, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
I like
the ending of that film a lot.
Me too.
Nick Stahl, come back to us. We don't know where you are.
Great ending though. Great ending.
And Terminator Salvation came out in the 2000s, and that's the one with Christian Bale. Back in the day, Chuck, which I liked, although it just doesn't feel like a real Terminator movie.
Yeah, it's a mishmash. They sell Bale as the lead, and he's not.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's just very weirdly edited.
Are you a fan of...
And the Arnold Schwarzenegger CGI cameo, not good.
Yeah, not good. Are you a fan of either remake of The Time Machine, the H.G. Wells movie with... 2002, or The War of the Worlds with the Steven Spielberg, much bigger, better, more polished movie.
I like War of the Worlds a lot better, although that movie has issues for me, but there's a lot of good stuff in it.
Again.
A lot of good stuff.
Again.
The ending stinks, though.
The ending's awful. It is god-awful.
It's a big thud.
Yeah. And it's surprising.
And when they take the movie into Tim Robbins' basement.
Yeah. That's what I was going to bring up.
Listen, it's good stuff. But it's not what I really wanted to watch.
No, that's what I was going to bring up.
Makes sense?
Yeah, I think that's, and much like I Am Legend, when you get to that point and he closes the cellar door, I think
it's a different movie.
It's a different movie. And then the ending is just, the ending is inexcusable, really. It really is.
Spielberg?
Yeah, you can't, Spielberg is better than that. And that's disappointing. All right, let's get to the last decade here, the 2010s, Chuck. And there's a lot of mishmash of stuff. Obviously, the remakes of the Planet of the Apes movies are all there. We talked about that earlier. You got the Book of Eli, Denzel Washington.
I like that on a B level. I like it.
With the weird casting of Mila Kunis in that film too.
Yeah.
But we're both huge fans of the Cloverfield movies. I mean, at least I am. And 10 Cloverfield Lane is really a core apocalyptic thriller. It's an alien movie, but that really feels like the end of the world.
I agree.
With a great ending where, and I don't know the latest on it, Chuck, but I know when she emerges from that bomb shelter, I kind of wanted more of her journey.
Me too.
And I don't know if we'll ever get it.
We're not going to get it. We're not.
You don't think ever?
No.
Well, that's.
I think that ship has sailed.
That ship has sailed. Well,
but she's really good. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, John Goodman. It's a good cast.
It's a unbelievable cast. Edge of Tomorrow, the science fiction movie with Tom Cruise. We talked about this last week, I believe.
Yeah.
Doug Liman directed movie with Emily Blunt.
It's really good.
Again, a lot of buzz of a possible sequel on that. Uh-huh. I don't know if you consider the Godzilla movies end of the world. I don't, Chuck.
No, not really.
But another movie where, you know, Noah Emmerich goes back to the well. Dean Devlin goes back to the well one too many times, is the absolutely utter disaster of Geostorm, which came out in 2017.
Not only did he go back to the well, he went into the septic tank.
I mean, some of these scenes could be just outtakes from what 2012 is like. Oh, we got this extra film. Let's put him in another movie. And then
let me tell you something. That movie's so bad. If Irwin Allen was alive, he would have slapped him right in the mouth.
Well, wait a minute. It had Gerard Butler in the film. How does even he can't get
it's not all film. Awful. The story's awful. The execution's awful.
I think you're out of your mind.
Cut my boy some slack here, okay?
Chuck, I'm a huge fan of the Hunger Games movies. I thought they were fantastic. Not really end of the world, but definitely a post-apocalyptic kind of world with Jennifer Lawrence. Real good stuff. Are you a fan of – we haven't talked about those movies much on this show.
Hunger Games?
Yeah.
I mean, I like them. I don't love the series, but I like them. I like her.
Yeah, she's great. And Chuck,
Where's she been?
Yeah. Not since Mother. I don't think we've seen her on screen in a while. But then again, where's anybody? Chuck, my favorite movie of 2015 is the reboot of Mad Max Fury Road. I thought the actual stunt work in this film won a separate Academy Award, and I am a huge fan of Tom Hardy, obviously, and Charlize Theron, the one-armed assassin in this film. I love George Miller. To me, this is a directorial achievement with actual stunt work instead of virtual.
Yeah, that's always the highlight of the Mad Max films.
And I love Mad Max Fury Road. I know you have a little problem.
Yeah, I don't know, getting into it. But it's technically, I know it's very well done.
Chuck, remember Tom Cruise, again, Oblivion is one of those movies that you almost forget that he made a movie in 2013.
I saw that, and I remember we booked that at our theater. It's visually stunning. It's a very watchable film. It's just, you know.
There's a lot of great visuals in that, right? You're right.
A lot. That was that director's forte. The visuals were fantastic in that movie.
One of the best movies of the decade is Snowpiercer from 2013. Again, on a train. Again, Chris Evans, Ed Harris. Chuck, I remember, I just recently seen this movie in its entirety, maybe last year. And I tell you, this is one of the best movies.
We booked it. It was really good on a big screen.
And now they're making a TV series out of it as well with Jennifer Connelly in the lead role. A Quiet Place, Chuck, I got to tell you, watching it again, 90 minutes of pure and utter really scary movie done really well by John Krasinski. And obviously we await A Quiet Place Part 2, which will come out later this year, we hope. But upon repeat viewing, that movie holds up.
I love A Quiet Place. I can't wait for the sequel.
And
the reason we didn't get a sequel yet in theaters is because of that COVID thing, right?
Yeah, you might have heard of it.
Yeah.
But certainly not least in the decade, Chuck, two more Terminator movies. And I got to tell you, I've never wanted to turn a movie off quicker than Terminator Genesis. It's an abomination of the original film. I hate that movie. And then you had Dark Fate, which I haven't gotten the chance to see yet.
Me neither. And that tells you something about the franchise. I have not seen Dark Fate yet. Here's the thing about Genesis, Mike. I'm going to tell you something, throw you a curveball. On a weird level, I enjoy that movie.
That I don't know what level that is. It's definitely weird because the fact that they have these characters playing iconic roles.
I understand that.
Sit there and enjoy it. No, that's
crazy. I can enjoy it. I get the criticism, the timeline. They're freaking out playing with the timeline in ways that they shouldn't. But I like it. But I haven't got the muster to say I can't wait to see. I have not seen Dark Fate yet.
Well, mainly because it just looks like another one of the, you know, it's just a retread, you know, except it's a girl doing it now instead of, Arnold, somehow Cyborg's age, Chuck. I don't know if you know this, but
yeah.
Cyborg's, they get gray hair.
Listen, I'm sure eventually we'll see another Terminator film, but maybe they should wait at least 10 years. Let's wait.
Yeah. Well, Chuck, that's the end of the world, and hopefully we're not at end of days here. By the way, there was one movie in 1983 I wanted to bring up, and I forgot because it affected me a lot back in the day. And it was right around the time of The Day After and the scares that were going on in the early 80s with Russia. A little movie called Testament that came out.
I love that movie.
And I didn't want to close the show without bringing it up because it popped to mind. Jane Alexander actually got an Academy Award nomination. This was less of a, nuclear war movie. It's the aftermath of a small family,
yes,
in the suburbs trying to regroup and get back
on the path. It is on DVD.
Is it? Because I want to watch it again. I haven't seen it.
I have it, and I introduced it to my wife and daughter a few years ago. It's really good.
It's great,
and I know we didn't bring up Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
I didn't want to bring up too many zombie
movies. I just want to bring up the fact that we didn't ignore it. Because we know it's a masterpiece. For anybody wondering, listening to the show, why didn't they bring up Dawn of the... Yes, it's a masterpiece. One of the best movies ever made.
And all the night of... all those zombie movies. I mean, there's a lot of zombie movies. I mean, just would have... I think we've done a zombie movie.
Repetitive.
Yes. But by the way, if you want to watch Testament, there's a young couple in that movie. You might recognize them. It's Kevin Costner and Rebecca De Mornay.
Right.
Are stars in that film. So if you can find that movie... please do so, Chuck. Hopefully they'll keep making these type of movies when they get to the movie theaters. And there will be more End of Days movies, Chuck.
Listen, I'm going to close and say we need End of the World because I need to feel good.
We need End of the World to be in the movie theaters, not in real life, not on CNN. And if we can avoid that, I'd really like that.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll pray.
We'll pray. We'll do this again next week, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
This has been a presentation of Opt-In Productions. Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Download one of our archived episodes or listen to our next new podcast Friday. Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.